Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 21st. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today, and Greg Ward is back from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. They're all here to answer your gardening questions. Say, if you have one, now's the time. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. It's a popular show, usually. So you want to get in line early and hope for the best. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Checklist, Fred, check. Bob, check. Delilah, check. Greg, check. It's a full team. We're ready for your gardening questions right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today, and the gardeners are back to take your calls. We have Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. If you have a question about gardening, anything at all, bushes, shrubs, vegetables, whatever, get in line early. That's my advice. 800-348-2551. You know, we do the show every couple weeks, but it's invariably the case that someone's going to be left behind. 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. Voxpop@wamc.org or 800-348-2551. Hello, gardeners.
Hey.
Hello.
Dale Isla Riggs, how's the berry patch going?
The berry patch is going fine. We're all suffering from temperature whiplash.
Isn't that crazy?
Everything is moving in tonight for the frost advisory that
no,
we have.
Is there a frost advisory?
There is.
For us in the high elevations.
A freeze warning in Warren and some of these counties.
There is.
It's crazy talk. You know, the funny thing is, to me, the weather is exactly the same as when my wife and I left Monday. We went to a casino. We went to Turning Stone for a couple days.
Right, you mentioned that.
For our anniversary, 25th anniversary, which my wife calls the Silver Jubilee. And we went to Turning Stone. It was 64 when we got in. Stayed a couple days. Left yesterday. It was 64 again. There was no heat. Everything was
right,
fine.
Right, you completely missed the heat wave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And that was hot.
Yeah, it really was.
It was. Yeah.
It was dry.
Based
windy
on what I
low
saw.
Humidity.
Hot, dry. Yep. I think we were up to 93.
It really brought a whole bunch of things into bloom or about to bloom, though.
Yes.
So we went, you know, it's been a really interesting month where we started out a little early as we got to the 1st of May, and then we slowed down, and then we sped up again just now.
Yeah.
I don't know where we are anymore. I'm a little confused.
Yeah, it's definitely getting a little bit, like you
are
said.
Are we normal? You know, or are we
weather
ahead?
Whiplash is
I
a good way to explain
it. I think we're a little
ahead
now. Hard to tell.
Yeah, although, you know, when we used to grow strawberries outside and have to irrigate them for frost protection, we never took down our irrigation pipe until June 7th. Yep. Because half of the years we grew outdoor strawberries, 10 of the 20 years, we irrigated for frost between June 1st and June 7th.
Was it really? Wow.
I mean, it's always Memorial Day for, you know, the Berkshires, and I think the you know, Columbia, Albany County, Greene County, for the official planting of warm weather vegetables,
yep.
Right?
Yep, and that's what we have always used.
Yeah,
you know, growing up with my dad, same thing.
But it moves. Day, but it moves by a week every year.
Everybody's pushing the envelope, though.
Yeah, always.
They
yes.
are.
You know, you roll the dice. Maybe you get lucky, maybe you don't, right?
You know, from our perspective, if you buy them early and they die, you're going to come back and buy more. So.
Aha!
and they won't blame the garden center.
Speaking of that, you guys don't look that much the worse for wear after Mother's Day. It must have been crazy time over there at the gardens centers.
Yeah, we were saying that, you know, the entire month is crazy time, and it is crazy time right now. I can't believe we left.
Thank you for doing it, by the way. Thank you both for being here, and thanks to Dale Isla. I know you have things to do. Fred, I know the Landis Arboretum is just, it's an amazing thing. When does that crowded season really start?
May really takes off, and our biggest fundraiser, the plant sale, was last weekend. It went off well. It was perfect weather.
Good.
You know, a little bit inclement setting up, but I actually liked it because it was a little cool. And then the plant sale weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, super good weather, and you know, thanks for all the people that came out to support the cause. We definitely appreciate it.
All right, it's the gardening show here on Vox Pop with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's take care of a couple of emails, a few emails that came in quite a while ago. Nick writes in, just got my first digital pH tester. Have not used it yet. Any advice for new users of the tool? It says make a cup of water soil to test. A little vague, he says. How deep is best? What is the slurry supposed to be like texture-wise? What's the margin of error, et cetera?
Yep, so that's a good question.
The first thing is distilled water.
Yep.
Very, very important.
It is.
That's the water you use. I guess you can use rainwater, but distilled water would be better.
Right, because you don't know the pH. I mean, I've had water in our greenhouse that's like 7.2. Another person I know that's got a greenhouse has water that's 5.3.
Yeah.
Most municipal waters are between 7.8 and 8.
Yep.
Because they have to add to make the chlorine work.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned that. So very alkaline on chlorinated water.
So the pH scale, right, is a scale of 14 with 7 is neutral.
Right.
And water is acidic if it's below 7 and basic if it's above 7. So distilled water is neutral.
Right.
I don't think his question about the nature of the slurry matters that much when I've used it. You just mix some water in it and you stick it in there.
Yeah, it needs to have enough moisture so that it makes contact with the electrodes. Yeah. It can't be dry. But and you don't want it like a soup.
It's not too difficult.
No. And then, I think he mentioned, what's the accuracy or this or that. And I have tested. I have a really good electronic meter at home, and I have a cheap one.
Yeah.
And I've compared those two back and forth to see where the readings are. And a good one will tell you it'll be like, 6.235. It goes all the way out decimally. And then the cheap meter will tell you it's between 6.3 and 6.1. And it's close enough for most homeowners. So a lot of times
that's
I tell people
20,
just...
What, 20%? Yeah. 2.2?
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a range. And and when we're not really... most gardeners need to know if it's... are we looking at a 7? Are we looking at a 6.5?
Is it below 7 or above 7? That tells you a lot.
Are we looking at a 6? And it'll get you within a couple of decimal points, away from...
I really like the old Cornell kits with bromothymol blue and chlorphenol red.
They were actually pretty
accurate. I really like those kits.
Showing his age.
Yeah.
But it doesn't help if you can't spot the different color green or blue.
You're right.
All right, Elizabeth writes in, seeds galore is the subject heading. I just planted my vegetable seeds in my raised beds today. There are always way too many seeds left in the pack. I know to thin as they sprout, but is there another way to deal with the overflow? Also, is it necessary to cut out the water spouts and suckers from my foundation bushes? That's two questions. All right, first one first.
Yeah, so extra seeds, stick them in the freezer and use them next year.
Yep.
Really?
That's what
they'll
we do.
Keep.
Yep. I have tomato seed from 20 years ago that I don't want to lose it. And after we seed our tomatoes for the year, we stick them back in the freezer and they're fine.
What's in a seed? DNA? What is in a seed?
Seed is the embryo of the plant and the nourishment for it.
So what kind of nourishment?
You're getting awfully technical.
Well,
here,
I'm just thought of it. Well, what's in a seed?
When you eat,
it's mostly carbohydrates.
I was going to say mostly carbohydrates. Right?
Yeah, that's you're getting the nourishment, so the plant is getting that same thing. Just a little storage mechanism.
Go ahead about the other one.
Suckers on shrubs,
water spouts, and suckers.
So those you want to remove because. Suckers are coming up from the base, and most likely they're not even the exact plant you bought.
From the rootstock.
They're coming up from the rootstock. So if you don't take the suckers off in general, over time, you'll probably lose the original parent plant. The rootstock will overtake it.
So, it really depends on the plant, though.
Yeah. It does. Yes. I mean, it does.
I mean, if it's, if it's a Fothergilla, they just sucker all the time.
In which case you want to encourage it.
Or a sweet spire, a Virginia sweet spire.
Absolutely.
That's what they do. So it really depends on if it's a grafted plant.
Good point. Good point.
All right, one more, and then we'll take a break. These are all came in well before the show. We'll get to the email bag later for those that are coming in now. Andre in Croton on Hudson writes, is there a way to deal with hemlock woolly adelgid without hiring a company to handle it? Their services are incredibly expensive.
It depends on the size of the hemlock that you have to control it on. You can control it on something that you can spray. It's controllable. The problem is when it gets on a really big tree, you don't have the capability to hit it all.
Right, on a full-size tree, exactly.
It's a very easy insect to kill, so you can use a lot of organic products to do that, insecticidal soap, horticultural oil. work
but
really
the,
well.
The guys who come out and do it often will use a systemic that's just a bark spray, so they don't have to hit the whole tree either.
That's right. It takes it up internally.
It's easy to, you're right. It's, the problem is in a forest situation where you can't spray it.
Yep, and that's the hardest place to control it for sure.
Sure.
Yep, and that's where we're losing a lot of the old hemlocks.
And if you're hedging hemlock, so you're using it as a sheared hedge, you by pruning it every year, spring, summertime prune, you're really actually removing a lot of the adelgid. So it is pretty controllable by pruning.
It is important to get all the underfoliage too.
And what do you do with it if it potentially has woolly adelgid in it? What do you do with the clippings?
In general, you usually get rid of them. I mean,
once they're off,
they're not going to live
on
the
plant. They can't get away.
All right,
they can't do much.
Yeah. All right, one more. We only have a minute and a half here, but Kathy writes in, chilling hours. We've lost various fruit yields, apples, plums, possibly blueberries, over the past several years, and read that reduced chilling hours may have been the cause. Can you explain chilling hours? We're in the Capital District, 1,200 feet elevation. Winters have definitely been warmer, says Kathy.
Yeah, so chilling hours is the number of hours that a plant needs to be below 40 degrees for it to be able to bear fruit the following year. I'm not sure that I've heard of any plants being lost because of a change in chilling hours. It might be that they've been lost because it got suddenly cold when it hasn't been acclimated. Has anyone else heard of about 30 seconds?
I think what we've had is regular late freezes.
Yes.
And one has apparently happened this last time around that have knocked out the fruit of blueberries or apples or peaches. And I think that's what they're probably seeing because the chilling hours
are... We saw a lot of it this year where everything pushed out bloom and then it got to 25 or so degrees and it just killed off the flowers.
Yeah, because even on those warmer winters that we've had, it's still enough days below 40
degrees.
It's
that late one.
For chilling hours, there are things like blueberries that are warm weather blueberries that would not perform well and apples that would not perform well if you planted them in the northeast.
Right. Rabbit eye blueberries are grown in the south because they don't need a lot of chilling hours to produce a crop the following year.
Gotcha.
Whereas a high bush blueberry, like what we have, would not do well in the south because it wouldn't get enough chilling hours during the winter.
Let's take a quick break. It's Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. We'll hit the phones in a moment at 800-348-2551. Rock-a-bye, your baby, with a Dixie melody. There's Sonny Rollins with the All-Stars. I think that's, Fred, correct me if I'm wrong, Barney Kessel on rhythm guitar there?
I think you're right on
really? That. I'm just taking a guess.
Yeah, it's a guess. I wouldn't know 100% on that one.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Gardening Today. And let's hit the phones already. Colleen's in Ellenville. Hi, Colleen. You're on.
Hi, everybody. I have a question about... I don't know if they're gypsy moss or if they're tent moss or I don't know what they are, but the caterpillars, we've had high winds. They've blown off of my trees, decimated my maples, onto my Japanese maples, and now they're onto my rose bushes that started opening up. Can I spray neem oil on these plants to kill them?
Well, what kind of trees are you seeing them on? Like fruit trees?
I saw them on my maple trees.
They're on maple trees.
No, maple trees first. I don't have any fruit trees.
Okay.
So it must be the spongy moth, right?
So spongy, formerly gypsy moth, but now renamed to spongy moth.
And, neem will kill them. There's a thing called spinosad that will kill them. I think you can obviously treat the rose bush. A little hard to treat the maple itself. The maple should recover. You know, it's very early. So they defoliate the tree, and then as long as it's reasonable spring with moisture, then the tree recovers.
The difficulty with an organic like the oils is that if you don't hit it, you don't kill it. So you have to get pretty good coverage on what you're spraying.
Yeah, BT would also work, Bacillus thuringiensis, which you can easily get anywhere, and that they'll ingest it when they're eating the leaves, and it paralyzes them from being able to eat.
That's probably one
hours.
Of the better ones because you have some residual.
Yeah, BT works pretty well for it.
Yeah.
All right, Colleen. Good. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Carrie in Durham. Oh, I know this one. Wait, you can't get enough of Vox
Hey,
Pop?
Ray.
You were on yesterday, weren't you, on the Pets and Vets?
I,
I was while you were away.
Oh, well, welcome back to the show. Well,
thanks.
We'll see you next week, next month. Go ahead.
So I've got two quick questions. Can you hear me? Because it felt like you just cut out.
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Ah, good. I can hear you. Okay. So the first question is, we want to do a rejuvenate pruning of a hedge of forsythia next spring. Is there a best time to do it, or just do it when it's dormant?
So I think right now would be an excellent time to do it.
Absolutely.
And rather than flush it to the ground, go in and take out all the heavier, bigger stems as low as possible, leaving multiple younger stems.
Yeah, we talked about doing that. The problem is it's such an old hedge. They're all twisted. It's going to be really hard to get those out.
Yep.
So we were just going to take it to the ground.
Yeah, that'll work, too.
That will work.
Although if you took it to the ground, you would probably want to do it before it all leafed out.
Right.
So kind of like what the buds are beginning to swell. The energy's still in the root system. And then you sort of cut it to the ground, and then all that energy comes back up. And, you, of course, you don't get flowers that year, but you would get a new
They could wait till the summer at this point, too, right?
I don't think I would cut it to the ground.
No.
Which, you know, if you want to do selective pruning, like Greg said and Bob, you know, it's definitely a good time right now. It's finished blooming, perfect timing.
Yeah.
But if you're talking,
it's going to be too hard to get in there.
Then I would wait till the, you know, next year I would wait. If you're going to try to take this right to the ground in one shot, you could do both. You could take out what you could, you know, this year and kind of see how it looks. Maybe, you know, you guys could do more of it than you realize. And it starts, as you start to remove branches, it's easier to take out more branches, makes more room.
Yeah. I think that's what I think you should really consider thinning it now. And now, meaning from now through June, you have plenty of time. You don't have to do it all at one shot.
Several weeks.
Because the plant will look better. Everything will work out better if you do it that way. If you flush them to the ground, A, it sounds like you're going to wait a whole year. You might forget.
Yep.
And B, they don't always recover to an older plant like that, to the same sort of majestic form that you were hoping for or had earlier.
Yep. But or it might take a while, too, to get it back.
Thin them, you kind of never lose that form. You always have it.
Yep. All right, Carrie, thank you very much for the call. It's Gardening Today on Vox Pop. We have Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, and Bob Graves. Our 800-348-255 number is open. We have one open line. Hurry up. Valerie in Windsor, Massachusetts, you're on.
Hello.
You're on.
Hi. I have a problem with gout weed. Bishop's weed, gout weed. I got a load. Can you hear me? Okay. So I got a load of topsoil from a local farm a couple years back, not knowing that the seed was in it, and it's just completely destroyed my garden. Is there any way to get rid of this?
It's not an easy one. It's one that we battle at the Arboretum all the time. It's, a combination of, being diligent in there, pulling a lot of what you can, you know, get out and digging it out, covering what you can with a tarp or, black plastic. Mowing it works. If you can get into a spot where it mows, if you can just mow that regularly, it goes away. But you have to mow it low and frequently, low.
Are there desirable plants mixed in? Do you have?
Yes.
That's hard.
And that makes it harder.
I think if it's in a garden that you use the soil, you made a garden, that means the garden is fairly workable still. But weeding it with a nice like little hand fork, a little spading fork, so that you're slowly taking up the roots. You will get rid of 80% of it the first time, and then don't forget you did it and go back. You know, about a month later, you'll have all these little sprouts, but you'll have loosened it enough that they'll pop out pretty easily by doing the same thing.
You just have to be diligent. You have to really keep after it.
Hard part is when it's over on the property of your neighbor and it's creeping into your yard and flowering all the time. You have the advantage that you it's localized. You should be able to get rid of it.
Valerie, thanks for the call. Now, on the bishop weed or gout weed, same thing, right?
Same thing.
Okay. If you liked weeds, would their presence in your garden affect your vegetables? Or is it just aesthetic?
No, it'll take over. It'll choke out everything.
It grows in really thickly, so whatever you're trying to grow, you're going to want to weed it out around them.
For sure.
But if it's over there on the property edge, then you don't have to worry about it.
Except
it'll keep.
If you can keep mowing it, that's.
Yeah, if you can mow it, it goes away. Yeah. You got to mow it low. But, you know, it was planted. It was planted as an ornamental. And they used to be able to say, my mom bought some variegated version of that many years ago. But the problem with the variegation is it reverts back to the green. And then the green's very aggressive. The variegated is like a white and green leaf. And it's somewhat docile. It doesn't actually take over. But once it goes to green.
Okay. Do weeds get a bad rap? What makes a weed? Why is it different from another plant?
Oh, technically, by definition, a weed is anything that's growing in a spot you don't want it to be.
Right. A plant that is out of place.
Yep.
Because I've seen some weeds in the garden or out in the back. They flower nicely.
Well,
they're beautiful.
Some people think dandelion's a weed, but it has a lot of beneficial.
Right.
Goldenrod's
considered the weed?
You know, I have this garden there. I did a nice little daylily bank, and that merges into a few of these things called epimediums. I have my witch hazel that I bring in every once in a while, growing there. And then it goes into some Canadian ginger and a few sort of taller shade perennials, some Actea, some little snake roots and things. And the ostrich fern has moved in.
Yep.
Now, ostrich fern is a native plant.
Boy, they take over.
It's kind of, and for years it started with two or three. And I edge the garden every year and I clean it up and I weed it. And some of the times I throw out some of the ostrich fern. But in the last 2 years, the ostrich fern have really spread in. And now I like the ostrich fern.
Is it a weed or not?
Yeah. Yep. And that's an easy one to get rid of if you wanted to. But,
yes.
But I agree with you. I'd like to encourage ostrich fern. And that's the one fiddlehead that you do eat around here. It's the one.
He's always got to throw that in. Is it edible or not? He's always got to come in.
See that chair? I ate some of that chair. The number is 800-348-2551. Fred will eat anything. Sally in Hinsdale, you're on. Hello, Sally. Don't be shy.
Did you say Sally?
Yes, it's you, Sally. Hello. You're on.
Hi. I'm outside trying to plant things, and my question is, I planted 7 arborvitaes, like 4 foot or so, and they were beautiful all summer, and as fall came, they started dying, and by the time this spring, every one of them's dead, and someone has suggested that I burned them by putting Epsoma fertilizer in the hole, which I don't believe you're supposed to do that. So what the heck happened?
The most common thing I see is they're planted too deep.
Yep, or drought.
Or they were not watered.
Yep,
water. And sometimes if they look good
they were
going
watered.
if they look good going into the winter, but they don't look good coming out of the winter, it can either be winter kill or it can be Arborvitae leaf miner, which looks a lot like winter kill. But if they were totally dead last fall, that's not the issue.
No, they wouldn't be dead that quick with arborvitae.
Yeah, so the cycle was you planted them in the summer. They were green until fall. And in the fall, they started to discolor. And then
I planted them last spring, you know, they have little tiny bits of green on them now. But so I'm wondering, do I give them some time? Will they come back?
So the third thing we forgot to mention is deer browse.
Did they get eaten?
They can look dead right now because the deer ate almost all of the green things off of them, and all that you see is sort of brown sticks with little bits of green.
Did it turn brown and then the foliage stayed on and it was brown, or did you notice it and like, wow, there's no foliage?
I would say it was brown and then no foliage, but I'm wondering about deer because they've eaten other things
If you've got arborvitae and there's deer in the area, they got eaten.
If you want to send a photo to any of us on the email.
Why don't you send it to voxpop@wamc.org and I'll forward it to the whole crew.
We can tell by looking at it.
Yeah, but if it did turn brown and the foliage was there, but it's all brown, and that was in fall, that would not have been deer browse.
Deer.
That would more likely be probably, since you said you watered it, not enough water.
I'm worried
it
about
was
depth,
dry.
Too.
Depth. It could have been the depth.
Yeah, I had a hose coming out way out here, and I just diligently trickled it into each one every single day and just let it. Yeah, I did.
So you don't think water was? You don't think they went through a drought situation on new plants? So it's.
I don't. I really don't.
You know, if it's heavy ground and they were planted deep and you watered it every day, that'll kill them.
Nah.
Well, Hinsdale has a lot of rock.
That's good.
Know, you really gotta.
That's well drained.
Yeah, that's good for drainage.
Yeah. And arborvitaes right. can take water. They can. I mean, find them in really wet areas.
Yeah, take some, you know, some distant shots of the whole hedge, a few pictures of it close up, you know, so that we can see the foliage focused or whatever there is.
When you say you put fertilizer in the hole, how much did you put in the hole?
I don't know, half a cup per.
Not enough to be a problem. No.
The jury says it's okay, Sally. Yeah, send us the pictures. That would be great. 800-348-2551 is the number. Janet is in Cambridge. Hello, Janet. You're on.
Hi. Hi, Delilah.
Hi, Janet.
I have a question about, I have like 6 lilacs I planted about 20 years ago, and one of them is what I think you would call a blind, you know, it's just one trunk and it's getting pretty top heavy, but it doesn't seem to be throwing up any new shoots or side branches. Can I kind of nick that trunk towards the, you know, the bottom couple feet and get it to throw out some new shoots?
You know, that one might be a case where we had earlier in the show talked about rejuvenation pruning. And when you do have like a single trunk and it's older lilac and it hasn't got any suckers or any of those, you know, new shoots coming up, sometimes the rejuvenation pruning is the trick to kind of get back a new, you know, reset. And that would be, again, spring prior to growth when we do that. So if you went that route, you would have to wait till next year. It'd be when the buds begin to swell. They haven't opened yet. They're just starting to swell. You would cut it pretty much, you know, a few inches to the ground, and then in theory, all the energy's in the roots. It's going to set up a bunch of sprouts, and then you don't get flowers, but then you train that into a new shrub. That being said, if you're going to do that, it wouldn't hurt to nick it because you got nothing to lose. If you started to get sprouts, but we really want to get sprouts from the base, you know, not so much just from that one stalk. So if you nicked it, I think, you know, all you would do is get more sprouts from one big stalk. Not ideal.
All right. Anybody else?
So really, for rejuvenation, you would cut it almost to the ground.
You would, and but the timing is key, because if we did it now, that would not be good, because so much energy is in the plant. You want to get it, again, early, you know, spring, when the buds begin to swell, when most of the energy is in the root system, take away the top, and all that energy just sends up lots of sprouts, and then you kind of retrain a new shrub, and you sacrifice the flowers for a year. But I've done that. Lilac is one of the plants that works really well for rejuvenation pruning. Okay. Rhododendrons also work pretty well.
All right, Janet, thank you very much. We'll grab one more call here before the next break. And let's see, it's Florida, Massachusetts, and it's Victor. Go ahead, Victor.
All right, I'm calling about rhubarb. I was wondering about cultivation and the cutting of the flowers.
All right. Delilah, you want that one?
Sure. It's always good to cut off the flowers. You want the energy going into producing leaves instead of a flower stalk. Cultivation-wise, you know, it's actually pretty easy. Make sure that the weeds aren't overtaking it. I think, to me, that's one of the biggest issues with people growing rhubarb is they let it get buried by grass and other things around it. So if it's in a weedy spot, get it weeded, get it cleaned out. Give it some fertilizer, and we usually harvest ours for 3 or 4 weeks in the spring and then let it go. And that's about all we do.
Will it spread if you cultivate around it?
Gets bigger.
It gets bigger from the existing crown, but you're not going to get like little pieces popping up elsewhere from it.
You would dig it up in the fall and divide it.
Dig a piece up and move it over?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And always cut the flowers.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Victor, thanks a lot. Now, when you're harvesting that, right, some of it's poison. Am I wrong?
You should not eat the leaves.
Yeah, it's the stems.
Okay. It's just the stems, the petioles.
You eat the stems.
Yep.
But not the leaves.
Not the leaves.
We had some last week.
Really?
Yep.
Not a big, huge fan of that.
Oh, well, it was a crisp. you know, with a lot of sugar in there.
Oh, you got to have strawberry rhubarb.
And I was going to say strawberry rhubarb pie.
Well, we didn't have strawberries yet.
Just had straight up rhubarb.
It's coming. That's next. This with the strawberries.
You think you could fry rhubarb?
That would be interesting.
Wouldn't that be like deep fry it?
Ugh. If you could deep fry,
anything.
If you could deep fry dandelion heads and those things taste great, you can get kids to eat them. I'm sure.
Come on, Fred. You don't go out and deep fry those, do you?
They're really good. Yeah.
You deep fry dandelion.
They're little fritters. I got videos of the kids eating them just to make sure that I show them in later in life. Look, you guys did this.
Do you batter dip them?
One bowl egg and milk, one bowl flour, salt, pepper, egg wash.
You got too much time on your hands.
Flour, a pan with hot oil. I'm telling you.
Who's picking all these? The kids?
They're quick. You go real fast.
The kids do it. It's child labor. Let's take a break. 800.
The wife mostly has been out there picking them. She made salve.
Now we've been off the rails for some time. 800-348-2551. It's gardening. We'll be back. Super bad. Was it Bernard Pretty Purdy? Who did that one, Mike Bowen? Just whisper in my ear. Who was he? Oh, Idris Muhammad. Oh, yes. Okay, great. That's a good one. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's gardening today. Dale Isla Riggs is here. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. All right, Dale Isla. These look to be cucumbers.
Mini cucumbers. We are harvesting them off our little patio cucumber plants as we speak. They're in full bloom. We ate our first cucumbers last night and try a bite.
Do I have to?
Yes, okay. You do.
They're excellent.
I love cucumbers, but they do give me a little heartburn. All right, we'll do it anyway. The show's almost over. It'll be fine.
That's really good.
Crunchy.
Yeah, really crunchy. Nice and sweet, seedless, smooth skin. I think Fred's kids are going to be eating some tonight.
You can deep fry them, too.
You know what, Bob?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
That's not helpful. Those are very good cucumbers. I'm going to be paying for this, but I do have Alka-Seltzer in my desk. I literally do. Let's do a couple emails here. And oh, by the way, you brought strawberries, too.
Yes, we did. I did.
What do you got? Are they the same?
They are the same variety. It's actually the second harvest of the season. These are pints number 3 and 4.
Wow.
All the hot weather brought them on. Ooh. So these are a little beat up from the heat, making them soft where they sit against the pots that we grow them in. But they still taste great.
What's the variety?
It's called Seascape.
Oh, we've had those.
Yes.
They are delicious.
Yes, they are.
All right. As soon as you start talking to the next person, I'll try one. Meantime, a couple of emails. This is from Michael. I have a question about peonies. What can you put on them so they don't get the brown spots? And when do you apply it? Peonies are just starting to bloom now. Happy summer. That's from Mike.
Yeah. If he doesn't have the spots yet, you can still use some fungicides and you know, pretty much any general purpose. I think the copper-based ones will work, mm-hmm. but it's always good to read the label. It's often about air circulation. It's also often about depth. So if they're a little too deep, or if there's a lot of mulch on them, you know, it's a botrytis fungus that is common on peonies. But again, if they're in open, airy places, it shouldn't happen.
Yeah. If there's a little bit of shade, it's going to be worse.
Yeah. So it's usually cultural more than anything. Mm-hmm.
All right, Lisa writes in, I have new asparagus plants in my raised bed from 2 years ago now. My question is, do I leave the spears and let them turn to fern for a while, or do I cut the spears even now when they shoot up out of the ground? I just want to do it right.
Yeah, so if you've had them in the ground for 2 years, this is year number 3, you can harvest them for a week, 1 to 2 weeks, and then stop and let everything grow after that. They will keep putting up new spears throughout the spring. And with young plants, it's recommended that you just harvest for a short period of time, let the rest of them grow for energy for next year's crop.
And an asparagus bed will last for decades, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, we have one. The ones we're picking off from right now are like 20 or 25 years old.
Yeah, it's a great thing to put in if you have the space.
They don't like the weeds around them, so you got to make sure you stay weeded.
Stay weeded, and they need lots and lots of phosphorus. So before they're planted, people should really make sure they've got a lot of phosphorus in the soil.
Isn't phosphorus explosive?
Some types of it, yes.
You're going to burn your garden, right? No?
It's certainly possible if you use too much phosphorus right. because it's a salt.
But not in the quantities we would use for the plants.
Tracy and Adams writes, I'm looking to replace grass with native pollinator seeds plants on a slope. Do you have any recommendations for how to best kill the grass and prep the soil? And this is reversed. This is like bizarro world. How do I kill the grass and prep the soil? What should I use to make the native seeds make sure they don't wash off after they're planted?
Yeah, I mean, smothering, we always say, is the least amount of work and probably one of the better ways because you leave all of the organics there instead of taking or trying to dig it all out.
Black poly's cheap. You get a great big piece of black poly, put that on there, staple it or hold it down.
Yeah, put some rocks to hold it.
Another technique is to mow exceptionally short and then start to just sort of beat up whatever is left of the grass with like a really shallow tiller or a dethatcher, something that actually just sort of creates some open space between all of these exceptionally whacked down grass plants. So you're not eliminating your grass, but then the seed will fit in between them.
Yep.
And everything will come up.
Particularly if erosion is a concern, because she mentioned that as to how to keep it from eroding. You know, some loose weave burlap or some of the specialty products that are made for roadside hills.
The people who do large meadows usually do that. They also may use herbicides, and you can use organic herbicides. In this case, will be pretty effective. So the vinegar-based herbicides or the thyme oil-based herbicides, or I think it's thyme, clove, maybe clove oil.
Yep, and the citrus-based ones, too, would also work.
Well, those are going to definitely burn the foliage and really reduce, if not kill, the grass plants, and then you'll have room. But you want to have something for the seeds to grab a hold of, so you want to loosen that in some way.
Okay.
If they were to use vinegar, the 30% works much better than the 5% you get in the store. But recognize that it has a 48-hour reentry. You can't go in that area for 48
hours. It's
very volatile.
Wearing glasses and gloves and,
you know, vinegar's organic, but it's not safe.
It'll still burn. A lot of organic things are not safe.
Not safe.
All right, let's go back to our phones. It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. Let's go to Stone Ridge, New York, and Mike. Mike, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a Japanese maple that I planted about 5 years ago, and it's always done very well. But this spring, it only put out leaves on the bottom half of the plant. And those leaves are very strong, but nothing on the top half of the plant. Any suggestions?
It's probably winter.
It's gone.
Yep, it's winter damage. And at this stage of the game, not good. That's
what really hurts those is when we get really cold weather and really warm weather fairly close together. Japanese maples have a thin bark, and the vascular system, the vessels, actually freeze, so it's like a frozen pipe.
In
the wintertime, the vessels get leaky. You can't fix it.
No, and those are pretty famous for that.
They're famous for
it. You could, since the lower part is alive and it's still,
it'll come back.
That you could take the dead out and with some selective pruning, structural pruning, probably could reshape that to a new tree, though, since you have the lower part of that alive. It is going to take some structural pruning, and some time. But, since it's alive, you could probably get that to come back around.
Where would Mike find some resources to learn more about structural pruning?
So, you certainly go to treesaregood.org.
Treesaregood.org.
Yep, and that's put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. And I'm also teaching a pruning class at the Arboretum this year. It's
really?
On the calendar. It's in June.
You have a website, right? You might as well give the website now.
LandisArboretum.org.
LandisArboretum.org.
Okay,
Mike, thanks for the call. To Livingston Manor we go. Jane, you're on.
Hi. On my Joe Pie, for the last few years, I've had these little caterpillars that just decimate it. They look kind of like tent caterpillars with the kind of stripe down the back.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And someone's going to jump in.
Probably some webworm.
Yeah, I mean, if it's late summer, which is when the leaves are up, it's probably the fall. There's two different species of those, an early one and a late one fall webworm. You have caterpillars. They're on your Joe Pie weed.
Well, so this is my question.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Because they're not coming up yet, so I'm trying to get ahead of the problem. So because so many insects love the flowers, I'm wondering if there's something I could use on the webworms, on the foliage, that will not harm the pollinator insect later on when they bloom.
Well, that's the BT again,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah. So if they are, in fact, caterpillars, right, then that thing we were mentioning earlier, BT, is going to be able to kill the caterpillar without killing any other family of insects.
Yeah, it is genus specific. It only kills caterpillars.
It would affect adult moths and adult butterflies, which might visit the Joe Pieweed. So it's still, you know, going to potentially kill something. The other thing you could do, I assume this is your garden and you have a nice patch of it, is you could go out there, you know, try to get the timing and check them, and then just pick those caterpillars.
I do it, but it's like a full-time job.
Yeah,
it's a lot sometimes, yep.
All right, well, thank you very much for the call, and let's go now to, let's go to Dave and Clarence. Dave, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I want to say thank you to your garden experts last year. They gave me some advice about an overgrown garden, and the fella said, sometimes you just got to buckle down and tear it all out. So that's what we did.
That sounds like Bob.
Exactly. Yeah. And landscaper just left yesterday. He dropped off 20 yards of topsoil, and it's got the seed and straw mix on it now. So we're super thrilled with how big the yard looks suddenly. Climbing up the Norway maple is poison ivy. And I think also might be poison oak. Oh. The leaves look like baseball mitts.
Yep, so probably not oak, because we don't have a lot of oak around. We don't really have much oak. So ivy, most likely, but the leaves can look weird. You might have something else there, too.
Hang on. Greg's got an idea.
I was looking at my mitt to see if I could figure it out.
You brought a catcher's mitt?
I couldn't do it. Again, I think we'd take a photo of a couple of those leaves would help us.
There's some vines that, other than poison, because poison ivy, you got three leaves. Is a big leaf, that could be a grape, or it could be a Virginia creeper.
Yeah, but and so the Virginia creeper has five leaflets. Right. It would have five leaves all coming together. I guess individually they might look like mitts, but that's what we're kind of more caught on the mitt thing.
I guess an oak cluster on my dad's uniform kind of is what they look like. So I'm certain about the poison ivy on one side. Okay. But I've tried spraying it before, and I'm about to go to the hardware store and pick something up. Can you recommend what I should be looking for besides, let's say, oak and ivy and vine killer?
So if it is a vine and it's going up the tree, you could probably cutting the base of the vine with some pruners would be the first step.
Yep.
So that whatever is on the tree will no longer die and deteriorate over time. And then you could treat anything that sprouts off the vine with the poison ivy killer you would get at the store.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot, and good luck. Go ahead.
You could also paint that cut that you do with some kind of a, you know, herbicide if you had to get rid of it.
Probably with the poison ivy version.
Yeah, it'd be the same type of thing. So you do the cut, and then you get a little paintbrush and just kind of dab the end right after you cut it.
Could be an oak leaf hydrangea too. If it looks like an oak leaf, doesn't sound like it.
A vine,
but not a vine.
Yeah,
wouldn't be a vine.
Well, send a picture to voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll inundate the gardener's email boxes with all your photos, and they'll regret saying that. Let's go to Samantha in Hudson. Samantha, you're on.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
So what I wanted to get your guys' help with is I happen to buy a whole bunch of bulbs over the winter. And I like different kinds of allium and Casablanca lilies, different bulbs like that type. And I was planning on planting them in the spring, but I don't know if you remember, but it was frozen ground forever.
Yeah.
So now I haven't planted them still, and I was wondering, should I plant them now or should I plant them in the fall? What does it matter?
Definitely planting them now is pretty crucial, especially those lilies, because those, that's nothing wrong with planting those lilies in the spring. When you mentioned alliums, are they like the size of an onion? The big ones?
They're the ones with the big purple pom-pom pups.
Yeah. Yep. And so those, you know, typically we wait and plant those in the fall, or we get them in the fall and they're kept cold until then. But, you know, I don't think you want to do that. If they're still firm and something you can, you know, something that's firm and hard and they feel viable, I would go ahead and plant them now.
Okay. Okay, well, that was my only question. Thank you so much.
Samantha, thanks for the call. 800-348. Forget it. No, we're not going to get to the calls we have. We got a couple left, maybe tops. Let's go now to, there's so many people. Joe in Saugerty has been waiting a very long time. Joe, go ahead.
Hi. I always enjoy the show. I have a couple questions. I have a couple bags of fertilizer. One is 5, 10, 5. The other is 10, 10, 10. Which vegetable plants in my garden would the plants prefer, the 5, 10, 5 or the 10, 10, 10?
Any of those are going to be fine. That just refers to the percentage nitrogen, phosphorus,
yes,
and potassium. And
I was told that the 10, 10, 10 gives you more plant and not enough fruit. Is that true?
Well, with 10% nitrogen, that's really not going to make that big a difference. So I personally would use the 10, 10, 10, use it up, and that way you need less fertilizer in the future.
It doesn't make as much difference as you think on these. The difference is between fertilizing and not fertilizing, but what one you use doesn't matter that much.
Yeah. If it was, you know, 5, 40, 40, it would be different. But 5, 10, 5 versus 10, 10, 10,
the thing you have to remember with those, they're very water soluble. They release very quickly. If you use too much of it, you're going to burn. So go easy.
Very helpful. Also, I have a bunch of coffee grinds that I've saved. Which plants would prefer my coffee grinds?
All of them.
And we throw ours in a compost pile.
I think
it's a better way to repurpose the coffee grinds.
Okay. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Somebody in the newsroom said that there are certain worms that are toxic to dogs. True or not true?
I'm not a worm expert.
Pets and vets question.
That's a vet. You got a vet, Joe.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Well, they usually don't work on worms, but we'll check it out. This email very quickly, and then we'll wrap the show, from Tina. Fumewort started growing in my yard a few years ago and has been spreading ever since. I find it very attractive, but want to make sure that it is not an invasive species.
What was the plant? I didn't
miss. Fumewort, F-U-M-E,
lung
wort, fumewort. I'll show you. Maybe I'm saying it wrong. It's right in the subject heading there, Bob. Big print. You can see it.
You're saying it correctly. We just don't know.
You never heard of fumewort?
I'm not sure it's spelled right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Deleted all my apps. I don't know how you did that.
Okay. Yeah, not sure on that one myself.
All right. Well, I guess we're done. Bob, how do people find Fatigan's Nursery?
We're at 1140 Troy Schenectady Road in Latham, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, near the road that goes to the airport.
The new greenhouse is astonishing.
Oh,
it's like
you.
The Taj Mahal. It's
thank
beautiful.
You.
Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum.
Yep, so landisarboretum.org. And I just wanted to say that since we talked so much about eating stuff today on foraging,
yeah,
I am doing a foraging in the Northeast class on June 5th at the Arboretum. So
cool.
If you can't get enough of this stuff and you want to find out what tastes really good and safe, come visit us June 5th. Visit the website.
Things? Yeah, bring your own dandelions.
landisarboretum.org.
All right, Dale Isla Riggs, how do people find the berry patch?
We are on Route 22 in Steventown. We have people there on Saturdays and Sundays. You can find us at the Troy Market every Saturday from 9 to 2 or theberrypatch.net.
Greg Ward, how about Ward's Nursery?
Ward's Nursery is at 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, just south of the traffic circle.
Well, go ahead.
Wardsnursery.com.
Thank you all for being here. Support comes from Windy Hill Farm, Nursery, Orchard, and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, offering annuals, hanging baskets, tropicals, vegetable plants, seed, potatoes, and soil amendments for gardening season. WindyHillFarmInc.com. That's it. Thanks to the gang today. Thanks for listening. Sorry if we didn't get to your calls. A billion of them. These guys will be back here in 2 weeks. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Bowen. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. Tomorrow on Food Friday, it's a beer and barbecue bonanza. Bill Fletcher, Russell Mattson, and John Fisher. Oh, bring a bib.